Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 137. I'm recording it on Saturday, May 9th, 2009. The PE 10 level today is 16. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod, our friend Kevin, at theincompetech.com. The title of this particular selection is Wexford. The title of the podcast is 9 Valuation-Informed Indexing Portfolio Allocation Strategies. Too many 3- and 4-syllable words there. Holy moly. Valuation-Informed Indexing Portfolio Allocation Strategies. Thought on that theme, I'll just tell you something I've always thought was funny was when one of my favorite Beatles songs is Help. Thought that was a great song. And I like one-word titles just to begin with. And an exclamation point. So one-word title with an exclamation point. You can't beat that. And John Lennon, when he was talking about how he came up with the lyrics for Help, he said some critic had, no matter how big you are, somebody's going to try to knock you down. And some critic said, oh, yeah, the Beatles. Their lyrics, they don't have any more than two. They can't write any more than 2 syllables. The lyrics aren't any good. And John Lennon made it a little project. The next song he wrote was going to have some words with 3 syllables in it. So he has that, I do appreciate you being round. So he got in appreciate, a 4-syllable word. So I like that sort of thing. I just think that's the human spirit that I like, that rebellious little spirit that says, I'll show you 3 syllables, I'll show you. And I'll go to number one doing it. 9 valuation-informed indexing portfolio allocation strategies. Now, I'm doing a little bit of what John Lennon did, in that I get asked all the time, it's one of your favorite questions, Rob, what PET? Okay, we believe you, Rob, stop. Valuation-informed indexing rules. It's better than passive indexing. Stop. We believe you. What allocation should we go at the various P10 levels? Rob, tell us and we'll do it. We are at your command, oh guru. But you won't tell us. What kind of guru are you? You lead us into the desert and you tell us nothing. And we wander around the desert with no mana. Rob! You're a mean guru. I will tell. But I will tell in my own inscrutable way. Let me start for the newcomers. We have to start with the difference between passive investing, the dominant model of understanding how stock investing works, and rational investing. The model that I advocate at the website. Passive investing is a very simple difference. Passive investing says always stay at the same stock allocation. Passive investors agree that the stock allocation you use is very important. The most important thing you do in stock investing is deciding on your stock allocation. All agree on that. Passive say pick the best allocation and stick to it. Rationals say the opposite. Never, ever, ever give thought to staying at the same stock allocation at all times. You don't have to change often. Once every 10 years will work on average. Sometimes you might have to change in 2 years, but then you might go 15 years without a change. But on every 8 or 10 years, you need to make an allocation change. And you need to make an allocation change when there is a dramatic change in prices, because the risk of stocks changes dramatically with changes in price. So the allocation that would make sense when the PE 10 level is 8, which is very, very low, it doesn't make any sense at all when the P10 level is 30, which is very, very, very high. And the P10 and the allocation level that makes sense at 30, which is very, very high, makes no sense when the P10 level is 8, which is very, very low. So you have to be willing to change your allocation, your stock allocation, if you want to have a realistic hope of long-term investing success. So that's our premise. Everything at the site is rooted in that premise. The strategy that I recommend for the average middle-class investor is valuation-informed indexing. And that basically, if you want to know what indexing is, just go to, you know, Google John Bogle's name and you'll find all sorts of things under the title passive investing, or what you might call the conventional indexing approach. Indexing, basically, you're just buying a share of the entire market. And so you don't have to worry about picking individual stocks. You get a huge diversification at low cost. And that's a good strategy for the typical person who doesn't want to spend a lot of time researching stocks. It's great. But you don't want to follow the conventional approach and stick to that same stock allocation at all times, because then there will come a day when prices will go to insanely high levels, as they did from 1995 through 2008. And if you stay at that high allocation, you're going to suffer bone-crushing losses, and you're probably going to end up selling your stocks because you won't be able to take those losses, and you'll lose most of your retirement money, and it will take decades to recover. So not a good idea. So I recommend valuation-informed indexing, where the goal is not to stay at the same stock allocation at all times. The goal is to stay at the same risk level at all times. It's stay-the-course investing, but not stay the allocation investing, it's stay the risk level investing. So when the risk of stocks is sky high, you're going to go with a lower allocation so that your risk is not sky high, but just moderate. And when the risk of stocks is extremely low, you go with a really high stock allocation so that your risk is moderate. You try to keep your risk roughly the same at all times. Now, the way we do this is we use a tool called PE10, which is the price of the index over the average of the last 10 years of earnings. And if you want to know more about PE10, there's a separate podcast entitled PE10 Rocks. You can listen to that one. PE10 is the tool we use. And you can go to the website. We report the PE10 there. You can find out all about it. But what many people want to know, it's one of the most frequent questions I get, is just tell us, Rob, what should my allocation be? Today, PE10 level 16. That's today's the day I record this podcast, May 9th. What PE10 level should I have at a PE10 of 16? Can you please tell me? And the answer is no, I cannot tell you. And many people find that very frustrating. And it's because they're so accustomed to the passive investing model that they think like a passive investor. And the rational model it's just a different mindset. It just doesn't work the same way. And you've got to learn the language. Have you ever heard somebody say when they learn a new language, they speak German or they speak French or they speak Spanish, and they'll say, I'm thinking in German now, or I'm thinking in French now. Different languages think differently. Different cultures think differently. Americans don't process information the same way as Japanese or Chinese or Russians. We all have a different culture, a different language, and rational investing, which is rooted in the idea that you must change your stock allocation in response to big changes in valuations, it's just a totally different mindset from passive investing. They're opposites, really. And you can't take that old mindset and apply it to the new model. It won't work. So the type of thing that happens is there was a thread not too long ago at bogleheads.org, and the leaders of that board believe in passive investing, and they enforce that ruthlessly. They ban discussions of rational investing and valuation-informed indexing. Because they see it as a threat. It's a threat to their power. But they had a thread there where some people were discussing these ideas. And they were talking about a thread at another board, a sort of similar to a Canadian version of the Bogleheads board called Financial Webring Forum. And there was a fellow at the Financial Webring Forum. He's an abusive poster who posted the Goon Central board, but he wasn't really being terribly abusive in this particular thread. He was a little bit, but he was doing something very constructive. He did a chart, I don't know what you call it, a graphic showing that valuation-informed indexing is superior to buy-and-hold investing, to the passive indexing approach. And I thought that was great. And I participated on the thread, and that thread's still around. You can pull that up, and you can get the back and forth between me and the different members of that community. Some great questions. People ask some great questions. There's a link to it somewhere on my website. I don't know exactly where. I'm sure I linked to it at the blog, but there's also a link at Bogleheads if you could find it, but I don't know. If you really need a link, send me an email and I'll find you a link. But it showed that valuation-informed indexing is superior to buy and hold, which is great for me and for all believers, but and for all people who aren't believers but are looking for a better approach, you know, exploring options, because the fact that it's superior certainly is a positive sign that it's worth looking into. But one of the things that I found so frustrating, and a guy at Bogleheads basically said this, when he said, well, the way he said it was, oh, Rob finally agreed to say, you know, how, they always say, what's your scheme? What they mean by what's your scheme is, how do you change allocations based on PE10? And I, as a general rule, won't answer that question. And I usually explain why. I'm willing to say why, but I'm not willing to answer the question because it's an inappropriate question. It's a question that will confuse people and do harm to people. And I don't want to do that. But they rarely will accept my explanation. They'll just keep drilling. And on this thread, I sort of broke down and I said, all right, if you put a gun to my head, here's what I recommend. And I recommend it 30% stocks at high valuations, 60% stocks at moderate valuations, and 90% stocks at low valuations. And so this fellow did a Norbert Schenkler. He did a graphic with the 30-60-90 rule. And see, you need to have the numbers in order to do the graphic. You know, I understand is why they want to know. What they want to do is to do this back testing and show which is superior. But the problem with that is, it does not prove the case. It's evidence. It is significant evidence. It's important. So I don't dismiss it out of hand. I think Norbert did something valuable. But the reason I'm reluctant is I don't want people to think that 30, 60, 90 is the only way to go, because it's not. There could well, I'm sure that there are other allocation breakdowns that would do better in backtesting. And there are others that will do worse. But just because something does well in backtesting doesn't mean that's what you should follow in the future. So I would prefer that people understand conceptually why valuation-informed indexing is superior, and then use the numerical analysis to fine-tune their strategies. But if you start with the numerical analysis to show that it's superior, you're getting off on the wrong foot. You're putting your confidence in the wrong thing. You're putting your confidence in numbers instead of common sense. There are several reasons why I believe you have to change your allocation. Four, really. One is common sense says you must. No one has ever been able to come up with a common sense argument for why price would not affect long-term return. So you must change your allocation in response to big price changes. Two, the historical data shows that this has always worked in the past. That's also very powerful, I acknowledge, but it's secondary, in my opinion. Third, a lot of the big name experts have endorsed the principles of valuation informed indexing. There's no big name expert as of today who has endorsed valuation informed indexing per se, but many, including John Bogle, have endorsed the principles. They don't want to endorse, you know, they don't want to endorse valuation informed indexing per se, because if they endorse it, passive indexing collapses. And there's hundreds of millions of dollars invested now in promotion of passive investing. So that's viewed as a bad thing in the industry. But to bring it down. But I want to bring it down. That's my goal. That's my primary goal, is to bring down passive investing and let rational investing in. That's my goal. But it's not the goal of most people in the industry. But they endorse the principles. If you want to, you know, you can read lots of endorsements of the principles that valuation affects long-term return. And the fourth reason I believe that rational is superior is that we've spent 7 years in discussions on the retire early and indexing discussion board communities, and no one has ever come up with an effective argument against. They've never found any flaws in the rational approach, the valuation of WIRM indexing strategy. So with those four proofs, I feel confident in investing my retirement money this way. I don't want you to feel confident unless you check it out yourself. Don't go by what the guru says. Check it out. I'm not a guru in the first place, but that's I say that facetiously. But I am personally convinced, strongly convinced. So that's why I record these podcasts, to share that with you and you know, millions of others in time. Let's hope. Let's pray. But they put me on the spot when they say, tell us the numbers, because I want to help them put together these graphics. The graphics are helpful, but I know that they're going to focus too much on the graphics, on the numbers, and I don't want to mislead people. So I would prefer that. What I would prefer is we open up the internet to honest posting on investing across the board. And then, you see, we've had hundreds of people at Vanguard Diehards and at Boglehead show an interest in the realities of stock investing. If all of those people were free to post their sincere views, today they're not. If they were, when a thread came up saying, well, you know, what allocation should we be at a P10 of 16, you would be getting not one viewpoint expressed, you'd be getting a multitude of viewpoints expressed, and that's healthy. Some would say, well, you should be at 50% stocks. And some would say, no, 80% stocks. And some would probably say, no, 30% stocks. And they would give their reasons, and you could listen to the reasons and decide which makes sense for you. There is no one answer. I will, if that bothers you, then I want to make a comparison to explain to you why it has to be that way. Say that you believe in passive investing. Would it be fair to go to a passive investor and say, what is the allocation? You know, passive investors believe you should always stay at one allocation. You shouldn't change. Well, what is that one allocation? Is it fair to go to a passive investor and say, you know, is it fair to go to John Bogle and say, what allocation should everybody be at? What's the one allocation we should all stick at? He won't answer that question. He'll say, well, you have to look at a lot of things. He'll say, you have to look at, risk tolerance. And you have to look at the age. You know, Bogle says, as you get closer to retirement, you should go with a lower allocation. So Bogle will not give you one allocation. Well, all that valuation-informed indexing says is you should include another factor. You should include valuations. The valuation applies at the time that applies at the time you buy the stocks. But those other factors still apply. Risk tolerance, actually, the way I would rate it is, I think Bogle would say, the first factor is the stocks are always best. The passives say that stocks are best because they're riskiest, and risky assets give the highest return. I don't agree with that, but that's what they say. So they would say, one, stocks are always best. Two, you have to adjust for risk tolerance. And three, you have to adjust for age. I would say, one, you have to adjust for valuations. That's the most important thing. Two, you have to adjust for your life goals. That would include if you're close to retirement, but it would include other things. You might be close to a time when you want to buy a house, or you might be close to a time where you want to start a business. So things more than just retirement. Life goals. Three, financial circumstances. Someone who has $10 million in assets should not be using the same stock allocation as somebody with $1 million in assets, or $100,000 in assets, or $10,000 in assets. Different financial circumstances call for different allocations. And four, risk tolerance. I rate that. It's a factor, but I don't rate it as highly as the passives. And I did a whole podcast on that question of how to consider the risk question. What is risk under the passive model and under the rational model? But the point here is there is no one allocation. So, you know, you can tell me the P10 level 16. I can't tell you what the allocations can be. I can tell you the factors you should look at. And I do that frequently. but I rarely am willing to be boxed in and to give an allocation. And that one time I did it, and I don't know if it was a good thing or not, because it was good in that Norbert produced a valuable graphic and a valuable thread. But the unfortunate thing is that, as I expected, people misinterpreted it. And that saddens me. And I wish they wouldn't do that. But they can't help themselves. They don't understand the mindset. They're just steeped in this passive investing lingo and this passive investing logic. And that logic does not apply in the rational investing world. Passive investing it's a fear-based model. It's a model of people that are afraid of stocks, that want to be in stocks but are afraid of them. And they come up with these dogmas to sort of ease their fears, and they cling to the dogmas rather than face their fears. Rational investing is a model where you face your fears, and by facing them, hopefully overcome them. You never overcome them totally. None of us can do that. But the thought is that by trying to overcome them, you have a better chance of becoming emotionally balanced than by ignoring them, which is what the passives do. So what I want to do in the remainder of this podcast is to go through nine strategies that would tell you these are not the only nine, but these are nine that I just scribbled down in a few minutes of thinking about it. These are nine strategies you could use to answer that question: what should my allocation be? What should my stock allocation be at different PE10 levels? That's what I'm going to try to do. And I'll give them names just so that we have some terminology to use to refer to them. Portfolio allocation strategy number one. One more prefatory point. As I go through these strategies, I have nine of them, and I have a calculator called, the way you can test these strategies, you can test them with a calculator at my website and also at John Walter Russell's website. If you want to know the numbers behind everything I talk about in these podcasts, you have to check out John Walter Russell's website. He does all the research, the statistical research that is the engine for the calculators and for the development of the valuation-informed indexing strategy and the rational investing model. John's website is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. That's critical. We have a calculator called the Scenario Surfer, and that will allow you to go through a 30-year sequence of returns and try picking your allocation at the beginning of each year. And most years you won't be making any change, but every now and then you will, and see what works. So you could take any of these nine and test it in the Scenario Surfer. And the Scenario Surfer will only allow one test at a time. So if you wanted to run 10 tests of a strategy, you'd have to go through the calculator 10 times, which is a good idea. The more times you go through it, the more you'll learn. But if you want to speed that up, there's another calculator called the Investment Strategy Tester, where you can choose one of these strategies. Not all of them can be entered into the calculator, but most of them can. And you could choose one of these strategies and run 1,000 tests at one time. And then the graphic will tell you sort of the odds. You can compare the different strategies and see which does best. A natural for this podcast, I knew I was going to be listing the nine, and I thought, well, since I have this calculator, what I should do is, not everyone can be plugged in, but I think most of them can, probably 7 or 8 of the nine. So I said, what I should be doing is, I guess 7. Looks to me like 7 of the nine. And 6. I think it's 6 of the 9 could be tested. 3 cannot. I thought what I should do is test those 6. And then as part of the podcast, I can report the results. But I decided not to do that. And the reason is it's useful information. The whole point of the calculator is to let you do things like that. So the calculator will permit you, the investment strategy tester will permit you to look at these strategies and to find out which ones have done the best over the historical record. And that's important information. But the rational belief is the numbers are excellent guidance. The reason the numbers are so important is they're objective. in investing is a highly emotional endeavor, and we are all influenced. During bull markets, we wildly overestimate the value proposition of stocks. Everyone does, virtually. Maybe not everyone, but 90% of us. And during bear markets, we wildly underestimate. So we're always doing the wrong thing. When stocks are risky, which is in bull markets, they're far more risky than bear markets. I'm talking secular bulls and secular bears. Secular means long running. So, a bear market that lasts 3 months doesn't matter, or a bull market that lasts 3 months doesn't matter. You know, we're now in a temporary bull market. We've been going up. That's trivial. Means nothing. We're in a secular bear market. That's a big deal. If you look at the numbers, they get you out of that emotion. They get you out of that emotion, that emotional spin. That's the value of numbers, that they're objective. So numbers are wonderful. This whole model came about because of our discovery in the retire early community that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, those are the studies we all use to plan our retirements, are analytically invalid. Those studies were designed to pump people up during bull markets when stock markets are selling at insanely high prices, to pump them up and to lead them to believe that stocks are safer than they are. So the numbers are wildly wrong, but no one corrects them because everyone wants to be pumped up. So there's huge marketing value in pumping up the numbers because everybody wants to be told these fairy tales. Well, the benefit of using analytically valid numbers is they don't pump you up. Analytically valid numbers root you in reality. So during a bull market, they're going to pull you down a little bit. They're going to say, wait a minute, be a little more realistic. And in a bear market, they're going to pull you up. They're going to say, don't be such a doom and gloom Gus. That's what you want. So numbers have great value. But numbers are not the whole story. And in the passive investing model, people have a tendency to think of numbers as the whole story. And so they do things like, you know, they'll run a numerical test and they'll say, oh, well, that proves it. You know, that's what we should be doing. And no, it's just not so. And so I elected not to even test these things in the calculator before doing the podcast, because I said, if I test them and if one of these comes out superior, it's going to cause me to lean in favor of that strategy. And I don't want to do that. The proper way to analyze this is to start. There's three layers, well, at least three. One is to start with common sense, and I'm going to focus on common sense in the podcast. Two is to add logic, which is a little more than common sense. It's thinking things through, and hopefully there'll be some of that in the podcast. Third is to look at the numbers. So if you were to listen to this podcast and say, well, I like strategy one and strategy seven. I can't decide between the two. Well, then it would be great to go to the calculator and compare 1 and 7. And if either 1 or 7 comes out as superior in the numbers, you might say, yeah, I'm going to go with 7. 7 superior, and it's a pretty close call in terms of my reasoning, so I'm going to go with 7. That makes all the sense in the world. But if you let the numbers be the driver, I think you've got it backwards. I think that's a mistake. What you really want to do is pick the strategy that 1 makes the most sense to you. Why is that important? Two reasons. One, if it makes the most sense, it might actually possess the most sense. And two, if it makes the most sense to you, you will have more confidence in it. And the more confidence in it you have in it, the more likely you are to stick with it during hard times. And that's the key to long-term success. So you need to have confidence. And if you just pick whatever works best with the numbers, you're not going to have confidence because you never thought it through. You don't know why you're going with that strategy. All you know is, oh, it looks good. Looks good in the back testing. That's not a good reason. It's important. Please don't misunderstand me. It's important evidence if it looks good in the back testing. That is valuable information, highly valuable. But you don't want it to be the sole driver. You've got to think it through first. And if you don't know what the back testing says, I think you're more likely to think it through and then go to the back testing. So maybe someday I'll do a follow-up podcast where I'll check this in the calculator and I'll come back and I'll say, look, here's what looks good in the calculator. And when I do that podcast, I'll insist that before you listen to it, you listen to this podcast first so that you're grounded in the logic. And only after you've thought things through logically do you turn to the numerical analysis, because then the numerical analysis will help you. I'm afraid that if you hear the numerical analysis too soon, it can cause you to go off on the wrong track. All right, let's get to the nine strategies. One, the first strategy I call the cliff approach. The cliff approach is, and none of these numbers are in stone. I just scribbled these down, and try your own numbers. Think it through yourself. Remember the point. The point here is the fair value PE10 level is 14 or 15. That's fair value. Today we're 16. We're a little on the high side of fair value. Stocks offer a great long-term value proposition when they're selling at reasonable prices. So when we're at a 14, 15, 16, stocks are a pretty good deal for the long term. Not for the short term, but for the long term. Short term might be horrible. We might be facing a huge price crash in the next few years. I think we are. But we don't know when that's coming. You know, it might be 5 years off, and you don't want to be out of stocks for 5 years. So you can't let that influence you. You've got to go with the long term. And the long term says stocks offer a good deal. So that's our premise, that at fair value, stocks offer a good proposition, value proposition. Now, at low price, it's even better. You know, your most likely 10-year return at today's prices is somewhere around 7%. Well, now we're at 16. It's probably low. It's probably 6%. 6% real, annualized. If we drop to low valuation levels, the annualized real return can go to like 13, 14%. Double. You know, amazing returns. And if we go to the price levels that applied before the crash, you're looking at a long-term return of something around 2% real, maybe 3%. Not that, not horrible, but not that exciting. And you could do better probably in TIPS or I-bonds. You could do better in a lot of safer asset classes as a rule. And at the top of the bubble, we were looking at a negative return. Back in January 2000, the long-term return, the most likely long-term return was a negative number. So then you could beat stocks with a money market account. So that's our premise. And so the question is, how do we change allocations? Well, always the idea is going to be you want to be at a higher stock allocation when the P10 level is low, and a lower stock allocation when the P10 level is high. And the nine portfolio allocation strategies are nine ways of making the adjustments. They're not the only nine. They're just nine I happen to scribble down. In days to come, I hope that we're going to have, you know, thousands of people debating these strategies and on a daily basis, and there'll be all kinds of ideas on what's the best strategy. There is no one best. As we discover more things about stocks, we'll fine-tune it. But it won't be rational unless we acknowledge that it is mandatory to make changes in your allocation. There's one little exception to that, and I'll include that as one of the nine. But as a general rule, what distinguishes a passive investor from a rational investor is passive investors deny the need to change stock allocations in response to price changes. Rational investors insist on the need to change stock allocations in response to big price changes. All right. Strategy one is called the cliff approach. And what I have scribbled down here is 70% stock allocation for P10 levels up to 20, and including 20. 30% stock allocation for P10 levels 21 and above. The advantage of the cliff approach is it's simple as all get out. How simple could it get? If the P10 level's 21, you're at 30% stocks. If it's anything lower than that, you're at 70% stocks. So, I could write that strategy down on a matchbook. I could write that down on a business card and hand it out to people. And if you tested it, I haven't tested it on the new calculator, but I'll bet you it'll beat a passive strategy. I sort of wish now I had checked that one because it's so simple. So I will. I'll do a follow-up podcast someday, and what I'll do is I'll just go through the same nine, and I'll test them all and report what the calculator tells us. The calculator is just telling us how these things have performed historically. But I'll bet, I would bet $5 that the cliff will beat passive in the long term. Not in the short term. In 5 years, it might well not beat it. But in 30 years, the cliff approach, 70% stocks up to a P10 level of 20, 30% stocks, P10 level 21 and above, will beat probably any passive strategy. It'll beat always being at 80% stocks. It'll beat always being at 70. It'll beat always being at 50. It'll beat always being at 20. Any passive strategy, it'll beat. Historically. Why? Because passive doesn't make sense. Passive, if you go with a passive 70% allocation, there will be times when that's wonderful. It's perfect. But there'll be other times it's absolutely horrible, absolutely insane. Like the 13 years before the price crash. Nobody should have been at a 70% stock allocation at those stock prices. That was insane. But that's what the experts were telling us to do because the experts were advocating passive investing. So we weren't all at 70. Some of us were at 50. Some were at 60. Some were at 70. Some were at 80. Some, God help us all, were at 90 or 100. But we were all, not, we weren't all, but most of us were passive. So most of us had it wrong for 13 years. And most of us have suffered devastating losses as a result. So this painfully simple, idea I've put forward here, 70% stocks up to 20 in P10 and 30% stocks 21 and above, that one little, as I say, you can put it on a matchbook and you'll beat passive. You'll retire sooner if you follow that. But you can't follow it just for 5 years. You've got to stick with it. I can't tell you how long it'll take to go ahead. So it could go ahead in 1 year. If you had started following that in January of 2008, you'd already be ahead. In 1 year you would have jumped ahead, way ahead. But if you started in 95, you might not be ahead until 2008. It might have taken 13 years. So I can't tell you how long it's going to take to go ahead. I can tell you it's eventually going to go ahead because it's sane and passive's not. The idea of ignoring price is insane. The people who believe it are not insane. The idea is insane. The idea is emotional. It has nothing to do with human reason. Passive did not come from the exercise of logic. It came from giving in to an emotional impulse, a get-rich-quick impulse. There's nothing rational about the passive idea. Nothing, in my opinion. So, the simplest strategy of all is just what I call cliff. Do I recommend cliff? No. I think it's too simplistic. But some people are looking for simple. Some people don't want complication. And this is one of the reasons why passive is popular. This idea of just stick at one stock allocation is very simple. I love it that John Bogle gives simple investing advice. Well, there's a crying need for it. Middle class investors need to be in stocks, and middle class investors don't have the time or inclination to spend their weekends studying stock investing, so they need some simple ideas. And Bogle has provided them, and that's wonderful. Indexing is wonderful. It's simple. It's not the best investing approach of all, but it's simple and it's good enough. It's great. For the middle class investor, it's a match made in heaven. But when Bogle says stick with the same stock allocation, he's taking simplicity to a obscene level. He's twisting it into something ugly and destructive. No one should be sticking at the same stock allocation at all price levels, according to Rob Bennett. But if you want to stay simple, you don't want to have anything complicated, go with cliff. Very simple strategy. Not the best, but simple as all get out. Strategy 2, high, medium, and low. This is also simple, but not quite as simple. Slightly more complicated. Depends on how much complexity can you take. This is the strategy I gave to Norbert Schenkler when he wanted to do his graphic. I said, I don't know if I gave him the same numbers, but they were in the same neighborhood, same basic numbers. I think they were the same, but I haven't looked it up. I say here, for high, medium, and low strategy, I say 90% stocks up to a P10 level of 12. high stock allocation at those low P10 levels because the returns are so juicy. You don't want to pass up anything. You want to have almost all your money in stocks at those sorts of prices. They're just too good to pass up. From a P10 level of 13 through 21, go with 60% stocks. That's moderately high, not high, really. 60%, some it's high for some, but the passives would say 60% is a fairly moderate stock allocation. So for moderate price levels, that makes sense. Over 21, 30% stock allocation. That's when stocks start to get dangerous, over 21. They get insanely dangerous at 25. But they start to get dangerous at 21. So if you want to keep it real simple, you might say 90% up to 12, 60% from 13 through 21, 30% over 21. Again, simple. You'll beat passive. Go to the scenario surfer. Don't take my word for it. Some people might say, well, if I use Rob's calculator, I'm taking Rob's word for it. I don't think that's right because the calculator is the historical data in action. The only thing you're taking from Rob Bennett is, you know, that my partner, John Walter Russell, came up with the formulas. But the formulas are just an attempt to report accurately what the historical data says. Now, if you're good at statistics and you want to examine the formulas, that's all to the good. The more you understand about how the calculator was built, the better. If you're not good at statistics, you should be asking other people. You should be going to boards like the Bogleheads board, the Vanguard Diehards board, and asking people. Early retirement forum, and ask people. And you know, the thing you're going to have to do, unfortunately, is the passives are going to be hostile to the idea. So you're going to have to sort of be a little tough. You're going to have to say, no, I don't want to hear smear campaigns. I don't want to hear phony baloney, you know, attack stuff. I want to hear the real stuff. You know, talk straight to me and permit honest posting so that people who disagree with you can come in and tell me the other side of the story. You're going to have to stand up for yourself a little bit. But that's what you should be doing. If you should be looking at the historical data to test what I'm saying. But again, a simple strategy, high, medium, low, slightly more complicated than Cliff. I like it a little better, but I don't say it's the perfect strategy. Strategy 3, double Cliff. The Cliff, by the way, the first strategy I mentioned, there's a post at John Walter Russell's site, the Early Retirement Planning Insight site, where it was an amazing article he wrote, and he basically said, it's funny how people can study something for years. I don't mean just John. I do this, and others do it. You study something for years, and you get all caught up in the fine points, and you're arguing all these fine points, and then one day you come across something, and it's just so obvious. It just sort of, you know, hits you out of the blue, and you're like, wow. And you wish that all your moments could be like that. Those are the moments you learn the most. But the truth is, it's like an inspired song. You know, it's like Dylan writing Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands. People might say, well, you know, just you know, how did you write Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands? Do that again. You know, whatever that was, do that again. What people don't get is it takes 20 years to write Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands. You know, he probably started writing that song when he was 8 years old. He didn't know it, but his mind was percolating the idea behind the song for 20 years, and it came out in a flood when he figured the last piece to the puzzle, and it all came out. Well, John had an experience like that when he wrote this post, because we're always trying to understand, why don't people get it? Rational is, you know, valuation-informed indexing is so much superior to conventional indexing. Why are they resistant? Why? And John just, you know, he wrote up an article one time at his site, and he just said, you know why people think it's good? They don't think it's necessary to change stock allocations? Because usually it's not. It's very rare for the P10 level to go above 21. It's rare. And at all levels below 21, a high stock allocation is good. So passive is not, it's usually right. And if you go from 1975 through 1995, passive and rational would put you at the same stock allocation, no difference. It's only 95, and the same thing is true today. But from 95 through 2008, rational puts you at a low stock allocation and passive at a high. And that's the, see, going with a low stock allocation in those insane years would have put you ahead. And the beauty of passive is that it will, I mean, not passive, the beauty of rational is that it will always put you ahead. And once you go ahead, you get compounding returns for many years to come. So you end up far ahead. The edge that you get becomes huge with the passage of time. That's the beauty of it. But so it doesn't have to be complicated. You know, this cliff approach will do the trick. I don't like it because it's just, it's a little too simple. And I'd rather, you know, I'd rather fine tune it a little more than that. I don't believe in being too fancy, but I believe in putting a little more thought into it. Because I have more confidence in what I come up with if I put a more thought, put more thought into it. But it's interesting to me that you don't have to be complicated at all. But the double cliff is slightly more complicated, but not much. But the double cliff is 70% stock allocation up to 21, up to a P10, up to a P10 level of 20, 30% stocks from a P10 level of 21 through 27. And 0% stocks for a P10 level above 28. What I really did here was I just added another level where I said when stocks, you know, at 21 and 22, on the cliff, I went to 30% stocks at 21. And I don't know, stocks are a little dangerous at 21, but there are times when stocks do well at 21. Stocks went to 21, I think, in the early 90s, and they did well for a long time. So going to a low allocation at 21, you could make an argument that's pulling the trigger too soon. This is the sort of thing I'd like to see a lot of discussion on, a lot of different people chiming in with their thoughts. But 25 is never good. 25 is bone-crushing losses every time it's ever happened. 21 is close enough to 25 that I think, you know, you should be wary. And so whether you're going to stick with, you know, you could fine tune it. You see, you could just gradually drop from 20 to 25. That might be the best thing to do. You know, start at 80 and then go to 60 and then 50, 40, you know, go down bit by bit. That's one way to do it. But the double cliff essentially says you drop to the lower allocation at 21, but when you get to 28, you're out in crazy man land, Looney Tunes land, and you don't even want to have 30. You just want to have zero stocks. That's where we were for much of 1995 through 2008. We were 28 and higher for, I think, probably most of that time. Not all of it, but most of it. All right. Strategy, portfolio allocation strategy number 4, the gradual shift. Now, this is one that you can't test in the calculator because the calculator will allow you to set, I think it allows you to set 3 different allocation levels. So you can make some switches there, but you can't make as many switches as you would need to make for the gradual. We could have put it into the calculator, but it adds a lot of complexity to put this many shifts in, and I don't think it was worth it. You know, you could try the gradual shift in the scenario surfer if you want to try it and just see how it works. But a gradual shift strategy would be 100% stocks up to a P10 level of 10, 90% stocks for 11 and 12, 80% stocks for a P10 level of 13 and 14, 70% stocks 15 and 16, 60% stocks 17 and 18, 50% stocks 19 and 20, 40% stocks, 21 and 22, 30% stocks, 23 and 24, 20% stocks, 25 and 26, 10% stocks, 27 and 28, 0% stocks, P10 level above 28. Now, theoretically, that has the most appeal. Theoretically, an important point, I may do an entire podcast on this point, it's so important. One thing you will sometimes hear the passive say, now, after the stock crash, they're becoming a little more open. And one thing they will say is, oh, there's no need to change your allocation, but maybe at insanely high valuations, you should lower it a bit. They're sort of, they know they're wrong. The evidence showing that they're wrong is just a mountain today. But they don't want to admit it. So what you're seeing is some of the passives are saying, well, at extreme levels of overvaluation, a little bit of a change is okay. Now, it's true what they're saying, but the theory is wrong. The suggestion there is that there's such a thing. What do they call it? They have a name for it. Bubbles. They say only in bubbles. Well, the problem is if you adopt a passive mindset throughout your investing life, you're not going to recognize a bubble. What you're going to do is you're going to rationalize. If you spend your whole investing life, 20 years, 30 years, believing that valuations don't matter, and then you get into a bubble, you're not going to see it. You're so caught up in all the spin that follows from a belief in passive investing that you won't be able to escape it when you get into a bubble. You just won't. And the evidence of that is, look what just happened, you know. We were in a bubble, and lots of people were warning us, and we didn't listen. We didn't listen because we had bought into the passive investing mindset. As I say, it's like a language or a culture. You can't abandon your language or your culture overnight. So the idea that we're all going to stick with passive until we get into a bubble and then we're going to all flip? No, it ain't never going to happen. I may do a whole podcast on that theme because I could discuss that for an hour, all the reasons why it can never work. It's totally against human psychology. That can never work, in my opinion. So theoretically, what you must do is adopt a mindset of understanding that valuations always matter. Valuations are critical. They're the most important thing you need to understand to be an effective long-term investor. Valuations are absolutely critical. So if you believe they're critical, what you should be doing is following the gradual shift strategy where you make a lot of little changes in your allocation. As a matter of theory, this has great appeal. What I don't like about it is the problem is translating the theory into practicality, into practical application. In practical terms, the tools that we use to assess valuation, PE10, PE10 is a great tool. It works very well. But it's not a terribly precise tool. It's the best we have, but perhaps 20 years from now, we'll have a better tool. And the gradual shifting approach will work better. But today, I don't think we have precise enough tools to, you know, I can't really say to you that there's that much difference between a P10 level of 14 and a P10 level of 16. So I feel funny saying you should change your stock allocation. Now, under the gradual shift, I said you should change it from, say, 80 to 70. Well, that's not that big a change. Maybe that makes sense. There is a lot of theoretical appeal. It may be that down the road, I'll end up endorsing the gradual shift. I don't endorse it today. It may be that I'm so influenced by passive. And this is the biggest change from passive. This is the farthest difference from the passive model. The gradual shift strategy, you'd be making changes regularly, you know, almost every year. Passive, you never make changes. I am inclined towards something like, you know, high and low and medium, where you make a change every 8 years or so. So I personally am not convinced of the gradual shift. Although theoretically I see a lot of appeal to it, I don't think our tools are advanced enough. And the other thing the passives would bring up is, oh, you'll incur transaction cost, you know, you'll incur taxes and so forth. Well, perhaps. But I think it's more important to get your allocation right than to worry about transaction costs. So I'm not inclined to let the tax or the transaction cost thing drive me. And of course, passives incur transaction costs when they engage in rebalancing. So I'm not persuaded on that, but I do think it's a factor you should look at. The bigger downside in my mind is I'm a big believer in what Bogle says, tune out the short-term noise. And I worry that if you're changing your allocation every year, you know, once a year, it almost seems like you're following a short-term strategy. Maybe that's not right. I have to think about it more. But it worries me. It almost suggests to me that people are going to then be watching the PE10 level too closely. And I don't really think you should be watching the PE10 level closely. You should be checking once every 6 months, maybe. But you only need to make changes, in my view, when there's a dramatic change. So you don't really need to be paying that much attention to anything in the short term. So the gradual shift has some really good elements to it and some questionable elements to it. And as of today, I don't personally endorse it, but I would sure like to see more study of it. I think it has promise, but I'm not sure we're ready for it yet. Maybe down the road, that may be where things are headed, but it's not the one that gets my vote today anyway. Strategy 5 is what I call Numbers Plus. Now, Strategy 5, you would look at the numbers. You know, you'd run the scenario, surfer, whatever. Look at the stock return predictor. But you wouldn't follow any numerical strategy. And it, to some extent, this is what I do when I use Scenario Surfer. I don't follow any one of these strategies religiously. I follow bits and pieces of all of them, really. It's what I do. In other words, when I run the Scenario Surfer, I never would be at a high stock allocation at a P10 level 25. That's just out of the question. I never would be at a low allocation at a P10 level of 16 or less. But in between, I tinker with different things. And in real life, the one way in which the calculators don't mimic real life is that when you're running the calculator test, you're not being exposed to all the emotions that are going on. Of course, the emotional activity today is huge. People talking about the second Great Depression. So the emotional, you know, content is huge today. And that's a factor, and that may be influencing me. I don't know how anyone cannot be influenced by it. But under the Numbers Plus, you're deliberately taking the emotional factors into consideration. The goal is not to give in to what the media is pushing. The goal is to go counter to it in general, except in cases where you think, you know, what's being pushed in the media makes sense. And if it makes sense, you sort of go with it. Now, this is adding subjectivity. And the passives may say, oh, no, you can't add subjectivity. I don't agree. But I agree with the passives, you have to be careful about subjectivity. It's risky. Because when you start getting subjective, you can start talking yourselves into stuff. So I mentioned the Numbers Plus strategy with some caveats. But frankly, I follow it. I don't go strictly by numbers. And so, for example, today, if I went strictly by numbers, at a P10 level of 16, I'd be saying 70-80% stocks. But I don't say that. I usually say 50 today for the average investor, because the long-term value proposition is good, but I think we're going to see a huge price crash in the next few years. Not necessarily this year, but within the next 2, 3, 4 years. And I think people have taken such an emotional hit, they can't take another one. So even though your long-term return is probably going to be good, you'll never get to the long-term if you sell after 3 years. And another 50% crash might cause you to sell. So I say go with 50, or maybe go with 40. Or if you've taken really big hits, go with less. You've got to consider how emotionally vulnerable you are. That's what the Numbers Plus strategy is all about. It's about looking at the emotional factors. So I just scribbled some notes here. You might go lower in the wake of a huge bull because of the intense emotion. In other words, we're now living in the wake of the biggest out-of-control bull in history. That means that investor emotion is still sky high. It's better than it was, but the passives are still living in a fantasy world. And in all likelihood, they've got another big lesson to come. They've got another big price crash ahead of them. And that price crash is going to hurt us all, and it may capsize the whole economy. So I would lower my allocation because of that. Lower than what the numbers would indicate is proper. I say you might go higher during a bull. My second point under the Numbers Plus strategy, you might go higher during a bull than the numbers indicate, because it really might not be like it's ever been before. You see, what the numbers are telling you is what's going to happen if stocks perform as they always have in the past. That's what the calculators do. During this past bull market, a lot of people were saying, yeah, that's what happens if stocks perform as they have in the past. I am persuaded we're entering a new golden age. Stocks are never again going to be like they were before. We're going to Dow 36,000. Well, if you believe that, maybe you want to tilt a little higher. It's not a crime to allow a little subjectivity in. When I say a little higher, though, I'm not talking about 80% stocks. The numbers would have indicated, say, 20% stocks or even zero. When you're at a P10 level of 28, the numbers tell you zero allocation. So if you think the bull might really, you know, we might really be in a new golden age, maybe instead of zero, you go with 30, but not 80. So the numbers plus strategy allows you to not be a slave to the numbers. And I don't go strictly numbers plus. I sort of follow a mix. But I do include a numbers plus analysis in my allocation shifting strategies. A third note here, as I wrote, perhaps you want to look to discussion boards to assess the level of emotion. That's what I do. How emotional are investors today? I go to discussion boards. If there's a ban on honest posting on retirement planning, in effect, that's pretty darn emotional. That tells me we've still got problems. And those bans are still in effect today. So Rob Bennett's view is we've got problems. We've got problems. And when the bans are lifted, that to me will be a sign that things are starting to clear up. You know, here comes the sun. And the fourth note I had is this, you know, consider the Bill Bangin approach and the Taylor Larimore approach. Bill Bangin said, he's a financial planner out in California, and he has recommended his clients go to 0% stocks. He advocates passive investing. How the heck can he be at zero stocks? Well, he says these are unprecedented times, and therefore it's an exception. Well, you know, the whole idea of passive is that it's objective, and he's giving up all the objectivity. But I don't dismiss what Bill's saying entirely. There is such a thing as unprecedented times. The trouble is, are we humans capable of recognizing when we're in the middle of them? You know, do we have the emotional balance to pull that off? Well, I think a logical thing to do is to be skeptical of your ability to know when the times are unprecedented. They feel unprecedented, but they felt unprecedented in the late 70s too. And those were wonderful times to own stocks. They felt unprecedented when Business Week did its cover story on the death of equities in 1982. And we were at the beginning of the greatest bull market in history. So don't buy into your subjectivity. But maybe you want to give it a little play. You know, that's the human way to go. If you try to deny your subjectivity altogether, you'll end up abandoning it. You'll end up abandoning objectivity altogether. You're better to be a little bit flexible, I think. I think that's more emotionally balanced. So that's the numbers plus strategy. Strategy six, the safe passive approach. I tell you that passive is insane. The idea of never changing your stock allocation is insane. But there's an argument that somebody made at that same thread on what was it called? Oh, boy. Now I can't think of the money network. I can't think of the name of that forum where Norbert Schenkler had the thread on valuation informed indexing being superior in the back testing. But whatever that board was called, I can't remember the name of it at the moment. Something network or something like that. But there was a guy who came on and said he acknowledged that the valuation informed indexing made sense. But then what he said was it all depends on emotionally what you can take. And he said, some people just sleep better at night investing passively. And that's the best argument for passive I've ever heard. Because it's not one of these dogmatic, you know, the numbers support us stuff. Because the numbers don't support passive. But they're just saying, look, some people just feel better. They just don't feel comfortable changing allocations. If that's an emotional reason for going into passive, and emotion is what matters in investing, and if that's the only thing you're comfortable with, that's what you should do. So that's a good argument for passive. But it's not a good argument for going with a passive allocation of 70% or 80%. If you're going to go passive for emotional reasons, by all means do it, but you've got to keep your allocation low enough that you don't get killed in an out-of-control bull. So, you know, safe passive strategy might be always going with a stock allocation of 40% or always going with a stock allocation of 30% or possibly 50%. 50% is awful high. That's as high as I would want to go if I was going to be passive. Never higher than 50. But if you're willing to limit yourself to 50 or 40, I think that could make sense. And for some, that might be perfect. So people, you can follow a passive strategy and still be a rational investor if your motive is just that that's what makes you feel emotionally comfortable. Because that's a rational motive. It's acknowledging the importance of emotions, not denying emotions, as the passive investing dogmatists do. It's acknowledging the importance of emotions and taking a practical solution to that and lowering your allocation, recognizing, look, I'm not going to be able to get those big returns that people with higher stock allocations get because I'm just not emotionally equipped to do it. That's rational. That's fine. That can work. That makes sense. Strategy 7, the Benjamin Graham special. I think I can be quick on that. Benjamin Graham is the author of the most famous investing book ever, Security Analysis. Came out in the early 1930s. He was Warren Buffett's mentor. And Benjamin Graham recommended a version of valuation-informed indexing. He said go with a 70% stock allocation at low prices, go with 50% at moderate prices, and go with 25% at high prices. That's sort of a takeoff. It's a parallel to the high, medium, low strategy, which is probably my favorite of the nine, although I really do a mix. Now, the difference is the Benjamin Graham numbers are lower, and I wonder why that is. You know, why did I tell Norbert Schenkler higher numbers? Was I influenced by the huge bull? Was Benjamin Graham influenced by the fact that he was giving those numbers in the wake of the Great Depression? This was the early 30s. I can't answer this question, you know? How can I know whether Benjamin Graham was being emotional or Rob Bennett was being emotional or both? I think it's worth pointing out that Benjamin Graham used lower numbers. And you're going to have to look inside and ask yourself, should I be going with 75, 50, 25 as my split, or should I be going with 90, 60, 30? I think it's worth noting that Benjamin Graham, who was writing in the wake of a huge bull, instead of living in the midst of a huge bull, which is where I came up with the 90, 60, 30, Benjamin Graham came up with lower numbers for the same concept. So you might want to take that into consideration. Strategy 8, I call extreme. I'm not in favor of extremes. I don't think they're emotionally healthy, but this is a dilemma I always face. When I'm using the calculators, I sometimes want to use the calculators and write articles about what I come up with and thereby sort of, you know, make a pitch for valuation-informed indexing. I always am compromised in this way. Whenever I'm using the calculator, there's two ways you can go with your strategies. You can do what's going to give you the best numerical results, which, of course, is what you want to do if you're making a marketing pitch. You want to beat passive soundly. But the trouble is, the way you beat passive soundly is with extreme strategies. And I don't believe in extreme strategies emotionally. I don't think they're emotionally healthy. So I sometimes have to say, look, do I want to do what I really believe is best, or do I want to do what's going to produce the best numbers? I know what's going to produce the best numbers, but I don't really feel good about doing it. So I go back and forth. Usually when I'm running the calculator, I go with what I think's best. But every now and then, I just want to see how much can I beat passive investing, you know, and I'll just run it. I'll go with what I think is going to work best numerically, but might be hard to stick to emotionally. The two are not the same thing because humans are emotional creatures. So the extreme strategy would probably produce better results than a lot of these, but it would be the hardest to stick to, so I don't recommend it. But it's worth thinking about. It's worth toying with, just because you can learn. The extreme strategy would be 100% stock allocation for P10 levels below 12, 70% stock allocation for P10 levels 12 through 24, and a 0% stock allocation for P10 levels above 24. Those are extreme allocations. A zero allocation and 100% are zero. Now, very interesting point. I have to wrap up, but a very interesting point is that in the book, this is another one that I may do a whole podcast on someday, but there's a fascinating point made in the book Stocks for the Long Run, and very few people ever comment on it, but I find it fascinating. Jeremy Siegel wrote that book, very popular book, and he argues at one point that stocks offer such an outstanding long-term value proposition that people should consider not just going with 100% stock allocation, they should consider going with allocations above 100%, which means they should borrow to invest in stocks. In other words, invest more than the amount of money that they physically have in their possession, because the return is so great that you'll, I mean, I do this in Monopoly. When I'm playing Monopoly, I mortgage properties so that I can build up if I've got a Monopoly. I'm borrowing, essentially, so that I can pump up. And, of course, business people do this all the time. They're building a business, and they know the only way they're going to expand market share is to borrow. So they borrow to the hilt. Leverage. And you've got to be confident that you're going to have money coming in. But if the money is coming in, that's the way to get rich fast. And so what Siegel was saying is, I look at the historical data, I see these amazing returns for stocks, and I say, wait a minute, is 80% high enough? Maybe 120% is the way to go. Now, I think the reason nobody talks about it is everybody knows that that sounds awfully dangerous. You know, people don't go for it. But theoretically, he's right. It's dangerous, but it has theoretical appeal. I think the error that Siegel made was he didn't adjust for valuations. If you went with an allocation above 100% during the crazy years, 95 through 2008, you got killed. You just committed suicide. And that's the danger of what Siegel was proposing, that at the very time when that strategy is going to be most popular, it's suicide. But with valuation-informed indexing, you greatly reduce the risk of stocks. Well, what if we go to a P10 level below 12, where the risk is minimal? The long-term risk, the short-term risk is real, but the long-term risk is minimal. Wow. You could set yourself up for life by an extreme strategy. I write down extreme as 100% stocks, which is extreme enough. The Siegel approach would be even more extreme. I'm not recommending it. I don't believe in extremes. So don't say that I recommended it. But I think it's worth discussing, because I think we learn through such discussions. I would never do this in my own life. I would never do this. But I'd like to talk about it because it helps me think about risk. So I put that forward not as a proposal or a recommendation, but just as a thought, as a mental exercise. All right, that's 8. Number 9 is called the lock and hold variation. Lock and hold variation is one I do all the time. But it applies not to, it's not a separate strategy of its own. It's an addition to a number of these strategies. So a number of them, you could add a lock and hold element. What lock and hold means is, say you were following a high, medium, low, the 30, 60, 90 allocation approach. And there, it calls for a switch at 21. It calls for 60% stocks up to a P10 level 21, 30% stocks at P10 level 22. So when you go from a 21 to a 22, you would lower your allocation. Well, when you follow lock and hold, what you would do is, if you went from 21 to 22, you would lower your allocation. You would do just what the strategy says. But if the next year you dropped down to 19, you wouldn't flip back. You would hold until things got significantly lower. So if you went from 21 to 22, you would drop from 60 to 30. Then if you went to 19, you'd stay at 30. Then if you went back up to 22, you would stay at 30. If you went to 25, you'd stay at 30. But if you went from 19 down to 16, then you would switch from 30 back to 60. So the point is, you have a resistance to changing allocations. The theory is, The allocation changes are not precise enough. The tools we use to make the changes are not precise enough and you want to lower your transaction cost, and you want to lower just your, you don't want to be switching all the time. I don't like switching all the time. I just don't like the feel of it. So you have a bias towards sticking, but when the numbers get really out of hand, you switch. Now, I always follow lock and hold, almost always, in my strategies. But when you go to the investment strategy tester, you can't do lock and hold. It would have greatly complicated the calculator to have added that element in. So with the scenario surfer, you can do it. You enter your allocation each year, so you can follow a lock and hold approach. with the Scenario Surfer, and I like Lock and Hold. I almost always follow it. I believe in it. But with the Investment Strategy Tester, you can't really do it. It's just a little too technically complex. But it's one of these things where it just has logical appeal to me. Because I don't like changing my allocation. See, I have a bias. Maybe I'm biased by my love for John Bogle, you know? Maybe that's it. He's taught me to not be changing allocations, and even though I reject his belief in passive investing, I reject it with some trepidation. I reject it, you know. I try to bend over backwards to be as close to Bogle as I can because I think he's on the right track. And so I try to limit my shifts, my allocation shifts. So Lock and Hold is a way to greatly limit the number of allocation shifts. If you follow Lock and Hold and you follow something like high, medium, low strategy, you will not have many allocation shifts, probably one every 8 years or so. If you go back through recent history, from 75 to 95, you wouldn't have needed to make any allocation shifts. In 95, you would have had to make a shift. That's when things got insane. But then you wouldn't have had to make another shift until September of 2008, when things went low enough again that you would increase your allocation. So two shifts from 75 through 2009, that's 24 years, right? 75, 85, 95, 2005. No, 34. 34 years. 34 years. So that's two shifts. That's 17 years per shift. Holy moly. That's very few shifts. There are going to come other times when you need to make shifts more frequently. Could be over the next 10 years, you'll make three. You know, we might have more jumps up and down. So those are my nine strategies. That's a longer answer to the question I'm always asked. You know, what should my allocation be at this P10 level? There is no one answer. That's like asking a passive investor, what should my allocation be? There is no one answer. But I think if you consider those nine strategies, you'll have the idea of what you should be thinking about in deciding what your allocation should be. And the best way to learn what works for you is don't go by what I recommend. Think about what makes sense for you, what you could stick with. Because if it doesn't make sense for you, you won't be able to stick with it emotionally. Go to the Scenario Surfer and run scenarios. Do one a day, you know, for 30 days. And I think you'll be a smarter investor. I think you'll learn a lot more about stock investing by running one test of the Scenario Surfer a day for 30 days than you will, you know, reading some investing book. I believe, that's my opinion, that's what I believe. That's how you'll learn. So those are my nine valuation-informed indexing portfolio allocation strategies. If you have some thoughts, I hope you'll consider sending me an email. Look for the Contact Rob button at the left-hand side of every page of the website. Good luck with your investing strategies, whatever they may be. You take care.